Now back to The People's Show with Seth, Dan, and Randeep on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Final hour of The People's Show, Dan Riccio and Randeep Janda. A couple of texts coming in on Vicky winning Password. The real reason you had to stop Password was because Vicky has won everything.
She might have won everything.
She won everything. She also passed on...
She did. That's why we had to come up with Password Extra.
A lot of prizes. Password is fixed just like all the Rager texts.
We can give you Rager's number if you think he's not a real human. I don't know if he'll appreciate that, but...
Yes. The topic I brought up before the break. It's always fun living in this hypothetical land, and since we're kind of in a break of the season, it's probably the time to do it. If you could, you know, in the NHL real world, like, there's no take-backsies, you know? Like, you can't just, like... undo a trade. Like, you know, the Edmonton Oilers can't undo Ryan Spooner for Ryan Strome.
Yeah, it's not like a video game where you just reset the game. Like, old school Super Nintendo.
I didn't save it. You know what? This isn't working out.
It's better anyways.
But would you take back the Garland OEL for the 9th overall pick plus Beagle, Roussel, and Erickson? Would you take it back if you could?
Okay.
Because it's not... like, of course, it's not as black and white as I think most people would make it out to be. Garland has been really good, and they've got him on a real nice contract under $5 million for 5 years now. OEL is and has been solid all season long. We haven't seen the production that you would hope of a player making $7+ million, but he's been a lot better than advertised. I think that's fair. So it's not as if this is a total L that the Canucks took on this trade, but this was their all-in move. They're probably not going to make the playoffs, and they took on a big salary cap hit for a lot of years. So that part of it is the big detractor here.
It's not the quality of the player. It's the timing now, right? At the beginning of the year, it was all-in move. This is going to be Jim Benning's move. If they make the playoffs, you know, it's going to be because of this move, and OEL is going to help them get there along with Connor Garland. If they don't make the playoffs, it's his last move anyways. It's the all-in aspect of it was kind of the selling point. But when I look at this, and I know OEL's price tag is, it's brutal. Mm-hmm. In the short term, you can live with it. In the long term, it's not going to get better. The Connor Garland move to me is the one that really matters, though. And I understand people are going to say, how can you ignore the OEL move? I'm not ignoring it. In the short term, OEL's playing almost 23 minutes a game, and he has been good. But Connor Garland, we talked about Thatcher Demko providing value in a contract. Connor Garland is doing that as well.
Yeah.
You've got a fixed cost for a player that is going to be in your top six, that is going to and has brought a level of engagement to your roster that you didn't have. And let's be 100% honest. The Canucks haven't had that sort of hybrid player that can be creative, that can be a pest, that can be a nuisance, and who is going all the time. Nils Höglander provides some of that. But there's a level of abrasiveness that Connor Garland brings, and there's a level of just grit that he brings that I don't think many teams in the league have that, let alone the Vancouver Canucks over the last decade even.
Yeah.
So I know it's a bitter pill to swallow just based on the fact that that contract for the OEL is so rough, but I value Connor Garland and what he brings that much that I'm saying no.
Yeah.
I would...
It's a contrarian take.
I know it's a bat. I know it's a potential. People are saying, how can you ignore the OEL contract? Even before they made the deal for Connor Garland, I really like what Connor Garland was doing in Arizona. And I'm willing to take the value on that deal because he's going to play above that value for the next, for the entirety of that contract. OEL is a rough one, but as of right now, and for the next, I would say, 2 years at least, hopefully, can he be a good player for you? And the answer is yes. If OEL plays this way, 23 minutes a game, and he plays well for you, he plays tough situations, you can extract value out of it to a certain extent, especially when you pair with Connor Garland. It's not a good deal long term, but Connor Garland is what makes that deal for me. And we talked about it at the time. When we look back at this deal for the Canucks, will we think it's the OEL deal or the Connor Garland deal? I think the Connor Garland one is what stands out to me.
Bruce DeLaBruce on the text line. 650-650 brought to you by Dunbar Lumber. OEL and Garland trade redo? Are you kidding? Why is this even a question? There's no controversy. It's not about Garland and OEL. It's about making an all-in type move when you weren't ready for it. Or that's not paying off. So what would have happened if you don't make the trade? What would have happened if you don't make the trade? You get the 9th overall pick. You probably take Dylan Gunther, Cole Sillinger, whoever's there for you on the board. All the guys the Canucks truly coveted were gone. Brant Clark, Kent Johnson went really early. So once the Canucks had an idea that they weren't going to get their guy, they were more willing to part with the 9th overall selection. But it's not just about that 9th overall pick. There was a 2nd-round pick in that deal. It's gone to Arizona. They'll use that pick this year. And the cap flexibility you would have had if you let one more year play out. Because Beagle, Roussel, Erickson all had 1 year left. That's $12 million of cap flexibility. You're not having the question of how are we going to keep JT Miller and Bo Horvat and Brock Besser on this roster. You don't have that question because you got all the cap flexibility in the world. You probably have another good draft pick coming down the pipeline because I mean, they're not good right now. They wouldn't have been good with Beagle, Roussel, and Erickson on the roster. So there's a lot of patience may have paid off rather than doing it too quickly.
Yeah, but the key word you use there, patience, this market didn't have any.
Yeah.
Like, in theory, it's a great theory. In reality,
if they had made a GM change last year, maybe it's a different story.
Sure, if there's a different GM and you're saying, okay, patience, and you're taking the long-term approach, and Jim Rutherford comes in during the summer, yes, you could think it that way. But with that regime, patience was not a word. It was not the reality. So in theory, yes, it makes a lot of sense. But if Jim Benning was going to be on the job, you had to do something bold there. And to be fair, a lot of us were saying over the last 4 years or 3 years, Jim Benning, where's the creativity? Every other team is making moves to shed salary, get rid of Beagle, get rid of Erickson, get rid of Roussel if you can. So I think to be fair, this market was impatient. So even though we can say patience would have worked off, the environment was not preaching patience. And most importantly for this organization, the owner said, hey, I take the L. It was on me previously. We need to move forward. So if that's the MO reach, I get it. But that's, to me, that's not dealing in reality. I don't think the atmosphere and the environment in this market was ever going to take that.
It's an interesting thought. We'll have to couch it for now. We bring in our next guest, play-by-play man for the Edmonton Oilers on Sportsnet. It's Jack Michaels. Thanks for this, Jack. How are you?
I'm doing well. I got the Rogers Center in the background here as we're all situated in Toronto, getting ready for the last game of this road trip, which, as you guys well know, has not been kind to Edmonton. Oilers desperately need a win tomorrow, and they may have to do it without the league's best player.
Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know if any of us really know what this team looks like without Connor McDavid. I guess the most recent memory we have is the short stint a couple of years ago when Leon Draisaitl ended up winning the Hart Trophy, and Draisaitl really picked his game up. But now this team's just really going through it right now. It's a hard time to lose 97. If I mean, there's never a good time to lose them, but it's definitely not a good time right now.
Yeah, and of course, the season you're alluding to, 18-19, I mean, you know, McDavid was out 7 or 8 games. I mean, this just comes at a bad time for Edmonton. The Oilers are wobbling. They have been rocked by COVID injuries, all the things that, you know, every team has gone through, and they haven't come out with enough wins lately. They've got 2 in their last 12 games. The goaltending has fallen off dramatically. Mikko Koskinen is winless in his last 6 starts. Mike Smith came back and was, you know, a little rusty in his 2 starts. Played okay in St. Louis, just okay in Jersey. The overtime goal, not really one he's excited about. So, I mean, this team has, you know, a host of issues right now. And, you know, without Connor McDavid in the lineup, you just hope, if you're an Oiler partisan, that they can coalesce and find a way, you know, to get a victory, because, you know, like so many teams right now, Edmonton is about to enter a stretch of a prolonged absence. So you don't want to be sitting on essentially an 0-5 road trip for 13 days and having an opportunity to play just the 1 game against Ottawa. So this is a big one for Edmonton tomorrow. The problem is, of course, the Oilers are facing a Toronto club that's, sounds like it's loaded for bear. I mean, Austin Matthews tested negative today, I'm told. Very likely he'll be back in the lineup. And they're hungry to play, too. They've only played 1 game in 3 weeks. Here's an amazing thing about this season, guys. Edmonton and Toronto played on December the 14th. And were it not for the 1 New Year's game that the Maple Leafs played the Senators, from Toronto's standpoint, they'd actually be playing back-to-back against Edmonton.
Yeah, that's a it's a difficult situation for the Edmonton Oilers.
22 days.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's crazy. And, you know, the Maple Leafs are going to be playing Matt Murray. They played Matt Murray on Saturday and put up 6 against him. Mikko Koskinen is a topic of discussion across the country, but especially in Edmonton. First of all, what did you make of Dave Tippett's comments after that game, where a lot of people perceived that as a throwing the goalie under the bus?
Well, I mean, I think Dave Tippett is, you know, he's tried everything with this club. You know, kid gloves, you know, not calling players out. I think, you know, when you're in the throes of the kind of slump that Edmonton is right now, and again, here's the amazing thing. December the 1st, the Oilers had the best record of the entire league. I mean, a month ago. And now you see all of the ground he gained being eaten away by this losing skid. And against the New York Rangers, you know, 14 seconds in, Mikko Koskinen throws it over the glass on a dump in. Edmonton kills off the penalty, has the Rangers hemmed in for the next 2 minutes after that. So now you're 5 minutes into the game. The Rangers finally are able to extract the puck out of their own end. They dump it in. Koskinen misplay again. This one ends up in the back of the net. And right now, you know, earlier in the season, guys, as you were well aware, Edmonton was 16-5, but they were outscoring some mistakes. They were falling behind early in games and getting away with it. Well, at one point, they were actually 7-5 when the other team scored first. Well, now they've lost 11-12 under that scenario. You cannot play from behind continually in the National Hockey League. And the Oilers have given up the first goal in 11 of their last 12 and 20 of their last 24. That creates an unbelievable mental strain. And, you know, yes, McDavid and Draisaitl got off to phenomenal starts. But I found it a little silly when people started projecting, well, they could score 160 points, 170 points. This is not last year. It's not a Canadian division. You're not sitting in a hotel for 5 days and playing the same team 3 times. Understanding tendencies. You mentioned Matt Murray. He had a rough go against Edmonton head to head last year. The Oilers just feasted on the Sens. When you're playing the rigors of a real schedule with real travel and facing the other teams, especially, let's face it, guys, the strength of the league right now is in the East. You're not going to be able to count upon McDavid and Draisaitl to put up those kind of numbers. So what's happened is they've dropped to a mere point a game. Imagine that, right? You know, oh, point a game, they're really struggling. But the problem is the secondary scoring hasn't pushed upward to help them out. And when you're getting the same kind of goaltending you were earlier in the season, all of a sudden those 4-3 wins are starting to become 4-3 and 5-3 losses.
You know, we know the goaltending hasn't been good enough, especially lately. But defensively, you know, this team did a little bit of work back there. Keith and Cody Ceci. It hasn't really worked for me, Jack. I've really liked when Nurse and Bouchard have been able to play together. They've been really good. But it doesn't feel like Tippett's getting enough out of his decor.
Well, part of it is the entire left side has been decimated
by
injury. I mean, and I'm not making excuses here. These are just cold facts that a lot of teams are dealing with. But did I see guys like Marcus Niemelainen and Philip Broberg, you know, getting NHL games this quickly? I didn't. But they lost Nurse, Keith, and Cuckoo inside of a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's their entire left side. And I know Slater Cuckoo's a third-pairing guy. Chris Russell's been hurt. You know, he's hurt again. So, to some degree, you look at this team, and, you know, guys like Chris Russell, guys like Mike Smith, the Edmonton Oilers are counted upon. They got a lot of mileage on them. So, that's the risk in depending on those players to give you your depth, is because if they can't stay healthy, they're of no use to you. And so, the Oilers have used, I believe, 11 different defensemen in the last 3.5 weeks. And that hasn't helped the cause either. Now, you could absolutely make the argument that this is not a particularly strong decor. But I would say it's a bit of an incomplete. Cody Ceci has been a suitable replacement for Adam Larson. And to be honest with you guys, you know, Ethan Bear, I think, was not going to go much further in this organization. I think there was some frustration that Bear essentially had one, you know, pretty good year and two indifferent ones. It wasn't like he was a stalwart. So, the trade to acquire Warren Fogle, you know, everyone was talking about, well, you need secondary scoring. I can understand that, actually. CeCe's been fine. I don't think he's been to be honest with you, I initially thought that'd be a downgrade from Adam Larson, but he's arguably been Edmonton's most steady defenseman because Nurse has been banged up. He's been in COVID protocol. He's, you know, playing 30 minutes a night. You know, there are times where even he gets running around, and that's, you know, Edmonton Oilers' best defenseman. But again, when you're 2-8-2, there's issues all over the place, guys. You know that. So you're absolutely right to start looking at every area of this team and understand that right now it's a combination of injury, illness, and underperformance.
I know, you know, the goaltending has been a big focus for folks, but the third line center position, Ryan McLeod's done a decent job of it, but is getting a veteran 3C number one priority for this team, if you're talking about transactions and some way to acquire and add to this team?
You could make an argument that has been their, you know, they've brought Riley Sheahan in to be that guy. They brought, you know, Derek Ryan. What's happened is Edmonton has been hoping that basically 4Cs can play 3C, and it just hasn't worked out. Now, Ryan McLeod, I think, has the skill, the speed, the ability to play the 3C, but he's a young player. I mean, he's a rookie. So, you know, that's a big ask on a playoff contender. You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing if, you know, you're playing out the string in the final 40 games of the year, you say, all right, you know, let's see what this guy can give you. But it's another thing to ask that guy to produce in clutch situations when you've got your season hanging in the balance. And right now, the Oilers, their season is, you know, they've got to get going here. I mean, yes, there's an eternity to play. There's 60% of the year. But when you've got 2 wins in 12, you're feeling that desperation. You're feeling like the season might be teetering out of control. And to rely on young players is a bit of a gamble. Now, having said that, McLeod was the only guy to score against the New York Rangers. And I thought he and Tyler Benson probably enjoyed their best games. And you could make the argument that if you're not getting enough from other veteran guys, you know, guys like Devin Shore and Kyle Turris and Derek Ryan and Colton Sevier, then why not you know, get an infusion of youth and see what they can do. You know, it's one thing to rely on veterans if they're producing, but if they're not producing, then you can make the argument to give those guys expanded roles. But if your general question, and I think it is, and your general probe is, are the Oilers deep enough? The answer is no. You know, they're not. You know, Zach Hyman got off to a quick start. He's cooled off. Warren Fogel, you know, he's been okay. You know, he's but in other words, there hasn't been a surge from one of those guys. Yes, Puljujärvi has been in and out. I mean, look, Hyman's got 11 goals. Puljujärvi's got 10. You know, that's okay, but a lot of that was early in the year. When you need scoring is when your top players are banged up or they've cooled off a little bit. And that's when you need those guys to really step up. And thus far in this stretch, they just haven't done it enough. That's when you need that support scoring. So I think it'd be foolish for me to sit here and say the Oilers are deep enough, because to this point, or at least in this slump, they haven't produced enough to at least maintain, let's say, a 500 record.
It's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out. Jack, all the best. Enjoy checking out the Rogers Centre and the CN Tower while you're there in Toronto.
Well, it's looming outside my hotel window. I won't be going inside. Actually, I will throw myself under the bus today. I strolled in like I own the place going to the practice today and strolled right into a basketball court and realized, oh, they're at the practice facility. And I had a bunch of Raptors people kind of whisk me away as they're like, what are you doing in here? So in any event, that's the kind of trip it's been. Even the broadcaster can't get anything right.
That's hilarious. Jack, really appreciate your time. Thanks for this.
Take care, fellas.
There is Jack Michaels, Sportsnet play-by-play for the Edmonton Oilers.
So, yeah, Edmonton Oilers are shook, and so are their broadcasters by the sounds of it. Jack Michaels, always awesome to have him on. And there's some good news in the Pacific Division.
Yeah.
Calgary's losing. So the Canucks really want to aim high. Calgary's losing 5-2 to the Florida Panthers right now. So
your big rant about Johnny Gaudreau just...
Yeah, I guess he puts up points on a losing team. No, he's done. He's done well this year. But we've got, you know, we're at that point now. You're looking at other teams in the Pacific Division.
Yeah.
A month ago, we weren't having that conversation here in Vancouver. Now you're actually scoreboard watching.
Yeah, it's true. The Oilers' loss last night increased the Canucks' chances of making the playoffs. Actually, earlier today on Sportsnet Today with Vic Nizar, they asked Yannick Hansen about, for his take on the Edmonton Oilers. Here it is.
Oh, it's the same story.
When Yannick hits you with an oha, you know it's a tough question.
Nothing beats Yannick. It's great.
Awesome analysis. I would say the best in the city. Mm-hmm. On top of that, the best reactions.
Yep. And the oha. Really, every time gets you. All right. Maybe more from Yannick Hansen coming up in this final segment. We'll close out this edition of The People Show. Have some fun stuff lined up as well that we didn't get to earlier on in the show, including just how bad Vancouver is when it's snowing. It's awful. I don't know how else to put it. Does nobody use salt in this city? Like, I fear for my life walking down the sidewalk. Anyways, it's The People Show, Sports at 650.
Now back to The People Show with Seth, Dan, and Randeep on Sportsnet 650.
On the Dunbar Lumber text line, reach, salt. Your Blundstones will be ruined. You know who I feel most for when there is salt on the sidewalks and wherever else?
Who?
Dogs.
Yeah, I just feel for dogs when it snows in general.
Yeah.
Well, Shortu Janda is having a hard time with this.
Yeah?
He doesn't want to go outside. it's you know, he's an older dog now.
Yeah.
He's 16 years old, man. He's lived a good life. But sees snow, doesn't want to go outside whatsoever.
I love the dog when they just like pull up, the door opens,
slam the brakes.
They see the snow and they're like, whoa, I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah, and then the salt gets stuck in their paws if they're small, right?
Like, yeah.
It's rough, man.
Tina used to like hop when she would get salt on her paw because it would like, I guess, burn. I don't know.
Yeah.
Must have felt awful for her.
Yeah.
But she wouldn't put booties on or anything. You know?
Yeah, Shorty doesn't do that.
No?
He's old school that way.
And you gotta have some serious patience to get booties on your dog. That's what I'm saying.
Is it worth it, though? Because Shorty's got this side of him now as he's gotten older.
Yeah.
He takes the teeth out real quick.
Yeah.
Like, he's... I'm not gonna lie, man. He's damaged me a couple of times.
He barks.
No. He chomps.
Yeah, he chomps pretty quick.
He's like, you know what? Don't touch me.
All right.
So, I'm not... Booties on
just
that.
Doesn't have time.
Does not have, no,
leave
man.
Me alone. Not in the mood
to
today.
To pick him up these days, yeah. Dude. Come on.
Not in the mood today. It's the People Show. It's really weird, man. Like, go to the grocery store last night, and I'm walking through the parking lot. I almost fell like three times. Is there no way of preventing this? How are lawsuits not happening left, right, and center with all of these slippery roads and sidewalks?
Your precious Blundstones aren't protecting you now?
I wasn't wearing the Blundstones, actually.
Okay, maybe that was your first mistake.
Yeah.
Apparently they're the shoe that can do no wrong.
Okay, wearing them now, though. Smarter today.
Okay, now it's snowing. I don't know. We're in the bunker. I don't even know if it's snowing. Please, mm-hmm. Weather updates on the text line if you can hit us up with those. But Vancouver, it was kind of like slush earlier today.
Yeah.
You know when it's just kind of like... I had to shovel this morning,
mm-hmm.
and it's like half snow, half slush.
Mm-hmm.
That is the worst. And then when that freezes over, then, as you mentioned, it's slipping and sliding. Like, it's not a good place to be.
Yeah.
So either, like, give me the fresh snow, or just be gone with it. Like, this whole murky middle area sucks.
Yeah.
Especially in Vancouver, because it's all like rain, man.
Honestly, the city does not deal well with snow.
No.
And I like there's some serious like natural factors that are into that, but like the hills and it's
the
very,
people?
Yes, the people.
No, it's when somebody says, "Oh, I would just want a white Christmas." I can't wait for Santa and a white. No! Not a white Christmas. You know why? Cuz you're seeing it right now, folks. We don't know how to deal
with snow.
We don't know how to deal with it.
No.
So next time somebody says, "I want a white Christmas," oh, it's just so beautiful.
No, you
just
don't.
Remember today, January 4th, 2022, and then talk to me.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, slipping and sliding, going down hills inadvertently.
Yep.
I'm probably going to slide my way home. White Christmas.
No one wants that. And if they do, they're lying. It is the People's Show. I got a couple of other things going on, but... Yannick Hansen was pretty good on Sportsnet Today this afternoon with Bick Nizar and Israel Fair. And, you know, one thing that, and we were talking about the idea of having a take back on the OEL Garland move. And it's really about roster construction and what things you should prioritize, assets that you should prioritize. And the previous regime did not prioritize cap flexibility as an asset that is quite valuable. So there is a lot of skill and understanding in roster building. But here is Yannick Hansen on roster building and maybe what other factors go into it.
It's luck. That's what it is. It is pure luck. You need your draft picks, the one you're taking later in the round, to turn out to be impactful players. You need your free agent signings to be better than you expected. Go back to, again, when I played, it's easy. Michael Samuelson, whoever expected him to come in and score... What did he score? 90-some goals over the 2.5 years he was here. Nobody expected that. Rafi coming in on a one-year show-me deal and providing something that this team hadn't had pretty much since they let Matt Cook go. Some physicality scared the bejesus out of the other team. Dan Hamhuis signing for less and becoming one of the best defensemen in the league. Like you need luck. And again, the draft picks need to pan out as well. And again, it's easy to draft in the top 1, 2, 3 and hit a player. But you need to be able to accumulate a couple more players that can maybe not just contribute, but also be vital parts of the team from deeper in your draft. And that can also be free agent signing. Like, again, it's easy for me to pick Vancouver because I remember all these players. Other teams do it well. But Alex Burrows coming out of nowhere. Nobody wanted the kid. Come through the minors, the East Coast, and becoming a vital part, filling out a role on top line here for many, many years. Pure luck. Again, you find a guy like that happens to turn out, gel with two of the best players in the league. There are so many instances just from taking our team back then when we were really, really good, where there was so much luck involved there. Alex Edler getting picked out of Villanova, Sweden, and turning into a franchise defenseman. Myself as well from them, like pure luck that we get drafted, come in at the same time around a core that isn't luck. The Twins aren't luck. Kessler aren't luck. Luongo weren't luck. But again, the pieces around them, there are so much luck that goes into that. Of course, there's scouting as well. But every other team scouted said players as well, but they didn't pick them for some reason. So there is so much luck that goes into it as well.
I think we need a luck counter on Yannick Hansen.
Today's word of the day, luck.
It was good in that it is honest. I think we often fall into this trap where we're like, this should have happened and that should have happened. And you often overlook that there is an element of luck. Now, are you consistently good at drafting in the later rounds, or do you happen to land a couple of guys that just really pan out? Because you look at the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, they missed on some top-end picks, but they hit on Braden Point and Anthony Cirelli and some of these other guys.
Andre Palat.
They got Yanni Gourde and developed him. And I think finding talent in the draft is one thing, but there isn't as much luck in developing that talent. And that's part of what you need to do as an organization. So I get where Yannick's coming from, but there is a lot that goes into the after the draft process.
Oh, for sure. There's a lot of luck. Thank you, Yannick. Yannick, just call in for that one. But when you talk about, you know, one criticism of the organization going back a few years and the previous regime anyways was, for a drafting GM, why don't you have more picks, right?
Yeah.
And then when you hear Jim Rutherford say, hey, the only deals I want to make is for picks or young players, that does kind of – there's a reason that people in this market say, okay, that's exactly what I want to hear at this point in time, because the cupboards are pretty bare. You want to have more kicks at the can when it comes to that drafting aspect. Another thing that, you know, Rutherford has recently mentioned is that collegiate free agents and focusing on there. So you can have luck in the draft and maybe you're unlucky there, but how do you get more out of the process? And you're right about development internally through an organization. Can you put those prospects in the right plan? Can you get the most out of them? Can you put them in a spot to succeed? But there's also, are you tapping into, you know, recruitment like other organizations? And two of the areas, collegiate free agents is something that the Canucks need to be better at. You know, they've had their occasional signings, but they could be better at it. Something that Pittsburgh was pretty decent at. And overseas as well. How do you take advantage of certain situations? How do you go into a European market, kind of like the Toronto Maple Leafs have done,
yep,
and pick up players that you can add to your roster? Some of them work out, some of them don't, but there are other areas that you can win.
Mm-hmm.
And strong organizations figure that out. So it's not only the draft, it's the collegiate free agents, the European free agents. And Europe has been, outside of drafting for the Canucks, you know, from players from Europe, they've had their wins there. But more recently, can you find some players in those leagues that can benefit your team in the here and now, within the next year or two, That's an area that I would like to see a little bit more luck, or not necessarily luck, but work done.
Well, Jim Rutherford does have a pretty good track record of finding those types of players.
And so does Patrick Alvin.
Yeah.
If that's the direction that they go.
The hard part for Vancouver is the West Coast. A lot of European guys want to stay on the Eastern Seaboard. And that's just a reality. A lot of guys coming out of college want to stay in the bigger markets, the Bostons, the Chicagos, New York, any of the three in New York or in the New York area. So it's always going to be hard for Vancouver to find those players. But is there a John Marino you can uncover? Is there players that you see something in that you can bring into your organization? Because wouldn't that be the perfect find for the Vancouver Canucks right now? Maybe John Marino is one in a million that Jim Rutherford uncovered a couple of years ago, but for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And it was a situation where he didn't want to sign with the Edmonton Oilers, so it worked out perfectly for Pittsburgh. But that's the type of win Jim Rutherford is going to need to get in order to bring this team towards being a Stanley Cup contender in the next couple of years. You're going to have something, and that's just something this team hasn't had. A big win out of nowhere. And that's, Yannick's totally right on that. You need to have some luck in finding an undrafted guy that becomes a top four defenseman for you. Finding somebody in the later rounds of the draft that becomes a stalwart third line forward, or better, becomes a top six type guy, like we've seen the Lightning of the world find. Those are the things that this team has not done at all. And you can put that on the previous regime. You can put that on bad luck. They've got to find something somewhere that puts them over the top in a cheap way, because they don't have cap space. They don't have assets. That's, I make it sound like they're looking for a miracle, but they kind of are looking for a long shot type of move to really pan out in a big way if they're going to be the team you hope they will in a year, 2 years' time. That's the kind of win that this team really needs.
Yeah, and it's a layered process as well, because if you look at, you know, some of the individuals that Jim Rutherford was able to, I think, maximize in Pittsburgh, some of them were in the system. It's how do you value those players? How do you give them an opportunity? And there's a couple of names. I think John Marino is the one you referenced. You know, you trade for him in essentially for a sixth-round pick with the Oilers, because nothing was happening on that situation. But if you look at the forward group, and when we talk about addressing the bottom six, you know, are there players within your organization or other AHL organizations that can be something of, you know, part of the future for you? And a couple of names that Pittsburgh really had work out for them were, you know, Brian Rust. It's the third round pick that was playing games in Wilkes-Barre, but eventually turned himself into the player that he is now, 27 and 22 goals in the last two seasons.
Yeah.
Another player that they ended up trading back for after getting rid of him originally, and now he's in Washington's Connor Sherry. Mm-hmm. Undrafted player, played collegiate hockey, very similar to a number of other stories, but this guy ended up being, you know, a 23-goal scorer, a 50-point player in the NHL with the Pittsburgh Penguins. So how do you find players like that where, you know, within your own organization or others, and the track record is there within Pittsburgh.
Fill out your depth on the cheap.
For sure. And some of this was also the people that were in charge before Rutherford in Pittsburgh as well. But it's when you walk into a job, identifying that talent, saying, hey, maybe we're using this player incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should give this person a try. Rutherford's pretty good at that, identifying those players within an organization. That's what he did quite well in Pittsburgh, was that some of these guys were in the organization. Do you elevate them at the right time? Do you find that right fit? It's going to come down to the GM and the coach. And I would say Trent Cull as well in Abbotsford is, you know, how's that relationship? And do you work as a cohesive unit to make sure that you get the most out of those players and you identify those talents outside your organization and inside? Because Connor Sherry and Brian Rust are two very good examples of they were there and they got elevated at the right time and they turned into 25 goal scorers.
Chris Faber, manning the show today. Canucks Army, you just wrote about some NCAA prospects that could be available.
Yeah, and to your point, how you're like, they like to stay back east. So I wrote about seven of these prospects. Four of them were at Boston Bruins development camp this past summer. So they're probably going to stay there. Another one at New York Rangers development camp. So
yeah.
You mentioned it. A lot of these guys are going to probably end up signing with these Boston teams, these New York teams, these big market teams. But I got one for you. A right shot defenseman, 6'3", 205 pounds, 22 years old, playing on the top pairing of the top school in NCAA, and he's from British Columbia. And Jake Livingstone, that's your guy. If you're looking for that free agent option, a 6'3" right shot guy, played with the Langley Rivermen in the BCHL, went now to Minnesota State, which is the number one team in NCAA, and he's playing top pairing minutes. If you're going to get the local kid, this is your guy in Jake Livingstone.
Well, that's a name that you should keep an eye on then. Jake Livingstone out of Minnesota State. These prospects are, it feels like they're getting better and better out of the college system. And every year there's a couple of guys, you know, a couple of years ago we were talking about Chase Prisky, you know, where did he end up? I think he's in Florida now.
Yep.
Has he done much? Not really.
I think he made his debut.
Yeah.
That's all I can say.
But it's about throwing darts at the board, giving yourself more opportunities to find something. Livingstone could be an option. That sounds like a perfect opportunity. Homegrown kid, coming back out of college. Would that be an option for the Vancouver Canucks? Those are the types of things they're going to have to do. And it's exactly what Jim Rutherford has talked about having to do, because they have a barren wasteland when it comes to their prospect pool right now.
No, and there have been examples where the Canucks have gone down that road before. Troy Stetcher obviously is an example. Jake Kaley is another example that they ended up signing him from Clarkson University a few years ago, and he did spend time in Utica and Kalamazoo. You look at other players, the Griffin Molinos of the world, right? And you go through other individuals, but how many of those were wins? Other than Troy Stetcher, not many.
No.
You need especially when we talk about the right side of defense, you know, the John Marino one was a huge win for Pittsburgh because, man, how difficult is it to get right shot D?
Mm-hmm.
So difficult to get right shot D, and you get a guy for a sixth round pick who ends up being a top four defenseman on that team. That was coupled with at that time, a win in Marcus Pedersen as well. Remember, they got him for nothing from the Anaheim Ducks in Pittsburgh. Contract's not that great now, but originally, that was another win for Jim Rutherford. So can you win at the collegiate ranks? Can you pick up players that other teams have maybe not valued or they don't identify? And that's going to be, for me, that's what I'm watching in the lead up to the deadline. I know we've talked a lot about big names and how can you move somebody? Will Trader Jim do that, you know, this season? I don't necessarily think that's a thing this year.
Yeah.
Off season, we can maybe discuss that. But do you have those players that you've maybe targeted potentially in free agency, collegiate free agency, or are you looking at other players that other teams are not valuing and saying, okay, is there something that maybe can be done and you're bringing in a young player and you're identifying a player of that sort? And that's where I think Rutherford's probably working in the short term, up until this deadline anyways.
So a little fun topic to close out the show. Chandler Jones unfollowed Kyler Murray today, and he talked about it, I guess, to avoid any sort of weird speculation.
Well, he was asked about it. So
yeah.
Why did you unfollow your quarterback?
Who follows this stuff? How do you... Anyways.
There are a few people in this market.
Not naming any names. Chandler Jones unfollowed his quarterback, Kyler Murray, on Twitter because Kyler Murray didn't follow him back. So he felt, an affront from Kyler Murray. He's like, I'm not putting up with this. If he's not going to follow me, I'm unfollowing him.
Is that fair or foul? I think it's fair.
Yeah.
Because this isn't like a practice roster player. This is Chandler Jones, who was like a star in the league, as a star on that team.
Do you have to follow your work colleagues? Like, is that a Is that a requirement when you get into an office that you have to, like, follow your teammates on their relative social medias? Maybe it's not Twitter for everybody like it is for us. Maybe it's just a simple Instagram follow.
Yeah, but okay. Here,
do you bang a follow on any Instagram or any work companion you might make?
Twitter is easy to get lost in, like, just there's so many tweets going out per second,
yes,
right? Instagram, I'm going to be that guy. If I don't like your content, I'm not following you.
Really?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Faber, is it a must following work colleagues?
I'm sorry. I'm just cracking up at something you just said that I have to clip. I follow everyone at Sportsnet 650. I just unfollowed C-Mac like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
Sorry. You're going to have to clip what I said or he said?
It's what I said.
Oh,
okay. I'm just glad this will cover up some of the things that I said. In
yeah,
the
I finally got a Reacho folder.
Thank
I think
you.
Started now.
Thank you.
Some so, seats in the butts?
Yes. That was one of my worst ones. Not even the worst one, though.
Yes. I don't think it's a necessity to follow, like, your colleagues. I'm seriously considering unfollowing a childhood friend because they've become an Instagram prize pig.
Ooh.
And they're just like tagging me in 10 things a day as they try to win hockey cards or baseball cards or whatever it might be for that day. And it's infuriating. Like, ooh, I have some notifications. Oh, it's just that person again.
Okay, so Instagram, and I've done my research on this,
mm-hmm,
you can restrict somebody.
Ooh.
So essentially what you do is you don't necessarily unfollow them, but you're just saying...
I can restrict them from tagging me and stuff?
That I don't know.
Okay.
I haven't really had that problem. I'm more like bothered by content. I was like, man, not this again. I'm sure you love your kid, but come on, I don't need to see him every story.
Is there anything else going on in your life? I'm here for Chandler Jones. You don't get the follow back.
Yeah, that's all right. And I'm okay if there's a colleague of mine that does not like my content, by all means.
Yeah.
But at Randeep Janda on Instagram, make sure to follow. They would not have any issues getting people in the butts.
Okay.
People in the butts.
People in the seats is what I meant to say.
What did you clip that I said?
Is it safe for radio?
I'll show you it after.
It's not safe for radio, but Reacho said it.
Something about banging, something about followers, something about Instagram.
I get the gist of it.
Yeah. It wasn't great. Not my finest moment.
I'm glad my clip has some company, though.
Do you bang a follow on any... I knew that was it.
You said it so naturally as well.
That's definitely a slang that I wasn't expecting to use on radio today. Because, you know, you have to hit the button to follow. Anyways.
The best part might be after is, like, you sound like a 60-year-old man, like, on the Instagram.
Because I knew what I said, and then I started to, like...
The worst is when you let up because you've said something. That is the ultimate, because it makes it worse.
Yeah, it's just like, man, I shouldn't have said that. Damn it, I'm trying to power through, but I sound even worse. All right. That'll end the show for today. It's the People's Show. Back tomorrow. For Instagram. For Chris Faber, Josh Elliott Wolf, my co-host, Randeep Janda. I'm Dan Riccio. It's been a pleasure on Sportsnet 650.